Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. So I did a whiteboard video today, and I wanted to share with you some of the conclusions I came to. And my base case for the next couple of years is we have moved into what I am calling a volatility supercycle. Now, this cuts both ways. This means volatility on the upside, but it also means volatility on the downside. It's like the yin and yang. The greater the crisis, the greater the opportunity. But if we're going to take advantage of that opportunity, we need to be prepared. And we need to understand, we need to zoom out and understand what the environment is going to look like so we don't get run over by a Mack truck. And the main thing, we talk about diamond hands all the time. But in this environment, I think what's most important is to have an iron stomach, not necessarily diamond hands. But we're going to get to that in just a moment. So why mechanically do I believe that we have gone into a volatility supercycle? And what does that mean for assets? What does that mean for your portfolio? And what can you do about it? That's what this is all about. So first and foremost, I want to, I was going to bring up a few different charts. And unfortunately, I've got them on my other computer, but we'll start right here. So this is housing inventory according to Fred chart. Now, I've mentioned this a few times, but what I discussed in step number one of today's whiteboard video is something I call the low float effect. Essentially, this is just a reduction in supply of XYZ asset. Now, you think that, well, this is great because if the supply goes lower and lower and lower, then the price is going to go higher. Maybe, maybe not. So before I get into the mechanics, let's go through what we're seeing with the supply side of the equation with all of these assets that I'm sure a lot of you hold in your portfolio. So usually the inventory for homes right around 1.4 million, and we can see January 2022 got all the way down to about 350,000. That is unbelievable. And now we've gone up slightly, but we're still only at around 660,000, which is less than 50% of what we normally have. So if we look at prices, what are they telling us about demand? Well, if supply is an all-time low and prices are flat, and this is the component people leave out the equation, it means that demand is also at an all-time low. So it is true that if demand increases just a little bit, you should have a larger than typical price move up, but if supply increases just a little bit, you should expect a larger price move down unless you have demand go up at the same rate. So then you have to step back and it becomes a question of probabilities. What is the probability that demand goes up or stays the same? And what is the probability the supply side goes up? And this tells us what we should expect from the price direction. But what the low float effect tells us is what we should expect in terms of the volatility of that price move itself, or the degree to which the price will move relative to the historic volatility that we've seen in the asset class. We've talked about real estate before, but this really wouldn't lead me to the conclusion that we've gone into a volatility supercycle. There's more to it. So now let's go over to gold, a topic that's near and dear to everyone's heart. So unfortunately, I could just pull up information from 2021. If I spend more time on it, I think I could probably get into the nitty-gritty of 2022, 2023, and currently. But I don't know why the trend would be any different, especially when you consider the share prices of these gold miners have been absolutely pummeled. And this would lead me to believe that they're struggling and producing less gold. Maybe not, but we see that the trend, at least in 20 through 2016 to 2021, was definitely down as far as the supply side of the equation. And this, again, blue line, represents annual gold mining production as a percentage of total amount previously mined. So now we move on, and for whatever reason, I deleted this. So let me pull it up real quick. Hopefully I can find the same chart that I was using before. This is the amount of gold central banks have been buying. And when I think about this dynamic, the conclusion, or the way I like to think about it, is basically in terms of hodling. So I can't find the exact chart that I was using, but any of these will pretty much do. Let's go to this one, where you can see in 2022, the amount of gold that these central banks were holding just skyrocketed. And it's pretty much the same level for 2023. And I don't see why it would slow down in 2024. Why? You guys know the answer to this. When Putin invades Ukraine and the US government comes in and says, naughty, 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 we're going to go ahead and seize your dollar assets, meaning the Russian central bank, all the other central banks are looking at this and saying, okay, well, it's Russia today, it's me tomorrow. And therefore, I want an asset on my balance sheet that doesn't have any of this counterparty risk. So they go out, they buy more and more gold, way more gold than they otherwise would. But these central banks aren't exactly traders, right? They're hodlers of gold. And if they have gold under their in their possession, you would have to argue that long-term, that's going to reduce the float if these producers are producing less. And even if they're producing more, if the central banks are buying more than the additional supply they're creating, which brings us back to the exact same dynamic we were referencing in the chart of the housing market. Okay, but it doesn't end there. Let's go over to Bitcoin. Speaking of hodling, and we've got a chart from my good friend, Lynn Alden. And on the right, we have the price log chart. This is represented by the black line. On the left, we have a percentage, and they're calling this the HODL wave. This yellow line is the amount of Bitcoin holders that have held for longer than a year. And what's really interesting is going back to, let's say, 2012 or when this chart starts, right around 25%, this goes up, as you would expect, but then the whales at the time kind of sell into this price spike. The price comes back down, and then when the price is coming down, then there's more and more people that are holding long-term. And you see this cycle happen over and over and over again. But what's interesting is the low in the HODL rate through each cycle is continually higher, to the point now where we've had this most recent price spike, and the rate's not even going down. It's continuing to trend up. Now, you consider this while at the same time understanding that we're coming to a halving. And basically a halving is the rate at which more Bitcoin is coming into the market is slowing down. So you can see how we would have the low float effect to an extreme with Bitcoin in an asset that's already extremely volatile. I'm not saying this is bad. It's just different. And same thing with the housing market. Same thing with the gold market, but that's not where the story ends. Let's go over to a chart that is probably applicable to the majority of the people on this live stream, maybe even more so than housing, and that's the S&P 500. Now, this is something you very rarely ever hear about in the mainstream media. The only reason I knew about it is because I've done whiteboard videos on this topic. So going back to 2007, these purple bars reflect the total shares outstanding in the S&P 500. So this gets down to a low GFC, previous to GFC low, right around 2008. And then, as you would expect, when these corporations are running into problems during the GFC, they're selling shares to generate liquidity. Okay, but then once we kind of come out the other side of the tunnel, or there's light at the end of the tunnel as far as the GFC, they look around them and like, wow, these banks sure aren't lending into the real economy, but they have no problem lending into the financial economy. In fact, they're throwing money at us. And we've seen what the central planners are going to do. They're not going to let the system crash. At least that's what they think. So they see their downside risk as very low. Okay. So if you're one of these CEOs, why on earth would you not go out and buy your, why would you not borrow at 50 basis points to buy back your shares? So what happens is, even if the demand for those shares is declining, the price will still go up as long as the supply is decreasing at a faster rate. So this brings us to a point where the retail investor is kind of living in a hall of mirrors where if I told you the S&P 500 was at an all-time high, or if the housing market was at an all-time high, you would immediately assume demand is at an all-time high. But in the case of the housing market, for sure, you would be wrong because demand is at an all-time low. It's just what we have seen is supply go down at a faster rate. So in all of these major asset classes, we are having a decrease in the supply. The float is going down further and further and further. And for those of you who are more sophisticated, you know what happens when there's a low float. The volatility skyrockets on the upside and the downside. Hey guys, I want to invite each and every one of you to join me May 31st through June 2nd in Orlando for Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the annual conference I do, and this year it's going to be absolutely incredible. We're going to have some of your favorites there as speakers, guys like Jeff Snyder, Mike Green, Real Estate, Kenny McElroy. We're going to have Robert Barnes. They're talking about freedom and liberty. Even Rich Cooper is going to be there discussing red pill issues. This event is all about giving you the intel, the insider information you need to not only survive 2024, but thrive. The whole reason I created this event was to give you the tools you need to build the future you deserve for yourself and your family. This is an event you are not going to want to miss. So to get more information, go to rebelcapitalistlive.com. You can see a full list of speakers we've had in the past. You can see clips from past events. And most importantly, you can get your tickets. As we get closer to the event, the tickets go up in price. So you're going to want to get those ASAP at rebelcapitalistlive.com. And we will see you in Orlando, May 31st through June 2nd. Let's look at a couple more charts. And this I just remember from this blog that I used as a reference on the whiteboard video. So we'll have to look it up. The first company they used as an example was Apple. So we'll do Apple price chart. It's real quick, basic stuff here. When we go back 5 years or even a year, let's say, price has gone up, it's gone down. But oddly enough, a year ago is right around where it is today. So we've had a little bit of volatility, but not a massive amount. So the next question becomes, how many shares do they have outstanding? Well, based on that blog post I referenced in the whiteboard video, about 16 billion, 16 billion with a B. That's a lot. But let's juxtapose Apple with another company. And I don't know what this company is, but I just remember the ticker symbol. The ticker symbol is EYES. So what is this company? National Vision Holdings. Okay. Well, now the ticker makes sense. And, Well, they must have referenced a point in time where the float of EYES was a lot less because they selected a, or this is I. No, I want EYES plural. Maybe we don't have the right one here. Let's look at a Bloomberg chart. Oh, there's a new ticker symbol. Okay. That explains why I can't find them. Ah, stupid Bloomberg. It's behind a paywall. Oh, okay. So it's Vivani Medical Inc. Let's use that. There we go. Wow. Okay. So this is the stock we're looking for. I can already tell just by a one-day chart. Oh, okay. So yeah, let's go to the, this doesn't really show you the extent of the volatility, but what they did in this blog post is they kind of started here and then stopped around here. And it was just like a, I don't know how long it was, like 2 weeks or something like that. And the price move was like 1,293%. And so the float here was about 20 million shares. So this is a perfect example as to the volatility increase if the supply decreases. You have that to the upside, but it cuts both ways. You can see it to the downside as well. So what does this mean for your portfolio? What are some actionable takeaways here? Well, I can't give you any investment advice, but what I can tell you to do is get in your DeLorean and go back in time. Not over the last few years where the only quote unquote experts that we have are these young kids. No offense, young kids in Gen Z or millennials or whatever, but you've never lived through a recession. You've never lived through a business cycle, for heaven's sakes. So we don't want to go back and listen to the Tom Lees and the Kathy Woods or whatever. We want to go back further, and we want to listen to the OGs, the guys and gals that lived and traded in the 1970s, the 1980s, the 1990s during the GFC. And they've traded all of these cycles. And when you read about those legends, as far as the rules for handling any type of environment, including one with high volatility, which I think we're going into, is they all have some common denominators as far as the rules they follow. And although they are simple, unfortunately, we as human beings are hardwired to where it's very difficult to actually execute these rules. But some of the rules I want to share with you for handling volatility in your portfolio. We're going to go over to one of the most famous stock legends from the 1980s, a guy by the name of Marty Zweig. If you have read any of the Market Wizards books, this guy, although I don't think he was interviewed, although maybe he was in one of them, but he's mentioned constantly. He started off, I guess, as a newsletter writer, and then he started to manage funds, and then he came out with this book called Wall Street, or Winning in Wall Street. So he has these 17 rules, which I think are spot on, because pretty much every single OG investor I've ever listened to, including the guys I hang out with in St. Bart's, they just reiterate this stuff over and over and over and over and over again. So I'm not going to go over all the rules, but I'm going to go over some things that I would suggest you think about in terms of how to manage your portfolio if we are truly going into a volatility supercycle. Number one, trend is your friend. We have to remember this, even if we're a value investor. Number two is something we all have heard, but very few of us have actually implemented. And that's, you got to let your profits run. And you got to take your losses very, very quickly. If you don't, I mean, I think we're going into an environment where this mentality of, well, I'm just going to buy the S&P 500, set it and forget it. This is not going to work. And it might not, it might work from an overall standpoint, but it's not going to work from an emotional standpoint. Because with the exception of the GFC, or maybe the Cerveza sickness, you have like decades in there where if you are one of these people that have your 401k, like a Dave Ramsey type, you have your 401k in an S&P 500 index or something like that. Yeah, you've got to stomach a little volatility, but at the end of the day, it's not much. Let's just assume for a moment that the S&P went into a mode that was more similar to Bitcoin. Look, all these boomers that are out there would be puking their guts out every single night, and they just could not emotionally handle the price fluctuations. So they would end up likely selling and buying at the wrong times, and therefore losing money, even if they consider themselves a long-term investor. A long-term investor becomes a very, very short-term investor if emotion gets the best of them, which it likely would when the prices are going up and down by 10% every other day. So you've got to somehow create a strategy that limits the downside while at the same time allowing your upside to be far greater. We call that asymmetry. Again, it's like building a strategy that's very similar to blackjack. And lastly, I'll point out this just priceless piece of advice, especially for the retail investor. If you can't sleep at night, reduce your position. If you can't sleep at night, reduce your position. So I know people hate T-bills and they hate this and they hate cash and you're losing to inflation. Look, I get it. But it's better to set up your portfolio in a way that you can mentally handle, or you can emotionally, you can psychologically handle, than to get whipsawed to oblivion to the point where you just can't stomach it anymore and you just hit the bid at a 50% loss and just put your tail between your legs, and then you go into T-bills and your only strategy moving forward is you're just going to have to lower your standard of living because you don't want to go through that again. And you swear off the stock market for the rest of your life. Very similar to what happened during the 1930s. Maybe a lot of you had parents at that time, or you hear all the stories. You know, the stock market was not a very popular place, let's say, after the 1930s. I mean, we didn't see the popularity of the stock market really increase until the 1980s, for heaven's sakes, because people just had PTSD. And if you look at the most volatile times in the market, go straight back to the 1930s. People think of the 1930s as the stock market crash. Well, we had that. It is very true. But we also had the stock market just ripping higher at certain times during the Great Depression. So what happened is people saw all that vol, and they said, I'm out. There's no way I'm dealing with this. The stock market is just for suckers. I'm just going to sit. I'm going to save my money, or I'm going to put it in bonds, because I know the stock market is just a fool's errand. So that's what you want to try to avoid, because we know that the people who would have stayed in, especially in the 60s and the 70s, would have bought cheap. They're the ones that benefited from all this capital flowing back in. So long story short, I would strongly suggest that you not just pay attention to the assets that you might want to own, your watch list, what's in your portfolio right now. You pay attention to the macro environment, but not just through the lens of recession, hard landing, soft landing, dollar, interest rates, all these things that we talk about, but also a key component of portfolio management, which is the volatility within each asset you own. All right, guys, on that note, enjoy the rest of your evening. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. See you in the next video.